Then I'm starting the recording. Today I wanted to talk about alternative access options. These are options that you can take to deliver articles to your users. So whether that be faculty, staff, undergraduates, graduate students, if you don't have a subscription. I know this is at a time when we are definitely reviewing and there may be changes in subscriptions across the entire SUNY system. So hopefully this allows you to frame how you are going to provide access if you choose to any content that you might no longer be getting through a subscription. All right. Feel free to ask questions via chat or unmute yourself throughout. I'm happy to take questions at any point throughout the presentation, and I'll definitely leave time at the end for questions as well. The focus of my presentation today, I'm not going to get into every single detail. I'll get into a lot of details, but for the most part, I want to talk about strategies, the plus and minus, or the pro and con, and then balancing the pros and cons of different options with your money and how much you have to put towards alternative access, and pretty much how to focus on looking at those different access options and then guiding decisions on how to provide access to the most amount of people in the best way that you possibly can. There's no perfect solution, but there are good solutions, good options, and I'm going to try to talk through as many of the as many of the things that you would need to think about today with this alternative access. So as we talk through this, the strategies, one of the main things that you'll just immediately be you'll be addressing is that access to a subscription has very few barriers. I mean, there may be logins, it might be something going in through a proxy, but other than that, there aren't significant barriers to the user. So as you're thinking through this, you can remove many of these barriers, but the more barriers you remove and the more barriers you remove for different types of users, the more expensive it will get. So this puts you in a difficult position that I think really just works against or is fundamentally not what is a core value of librarianship, which is equality of access to information, where all of the access options that I'm talking about today, unless you are going to take a significant amount of money and that you are using for a subscription, that you're going to have to make decisions that give different levels of service to different user groups or different levels of service depending on a variety of other parameters. So, I understand that this is not the perfect scenario, but if you step back a little bit and you think about other services beyond subscriptions, libraries and librarians have been providing different levels of services based on who the person is in a lot of different areas, and most of that is based on resource constraints. And it's just a practical thing that we're all faced with. So I do understand that this is not saying that this is a one-to-one replacement of a subscription. It is alternative access, which means that you will have to think a little bit differently about providing that access. So as you think about this, and the more money you move from the costs or the funds that you had and were contributing towards a subscription, the more of these barriers you'll be able to remove and the more seamless you'll be able to make the user experience For whatever journals or whatever packages you choose to take these different alternative options. And we realized that, you know, there's probably only five or six SUNYs who are really taking collection or access strategy approaches where you're taking funds from, you know, a big deal package, the subscription, and moving them into access strategies. So this is just, you know, one of many support presentations and assistance that we'll be providing. So we understand that this is a different way of providing access, but just think about it in that way, that it's not something that you can typically get a lot of good alternative access without taking some, at least some, and I wouldn't even suggest that it's anywhere near all of the funds from a subscription and moving them towards different access options. So this is something that, you know, this problem is something that has been going on. It's been reviewed both regionally, locally, nationally, internationally, over the last 10 years. 4 years ago, there was I2NY white paper on article delivery and pretty much alternative access options. You know, in 2015, this was just the beginning of lots of consortia and big libraries looking at breaking big deals. So it was a good time to prompt to say, what is the state of the industry in this regard? So I think what this I2NY white paper found was that there was at that time only an all or nothing approach to purchasing on demand, which today I'll talk about as link resolver based purchasing. And because there was just this all or nothing approach, there was problems where it could have a large potential spend that would be very similar in the amount you were spending for a subscription. So, you know, it wasn't a fantastic finding that the white paper, you know, found from its industry analysis. But I think in that 4 years, a lot of things have changed, and definitely a lot of things have changed for almost all SUNYs. So, you know, there has been a major progression in this area in the last few years. So if you had thought about this 4 or 5 years ago and you said, well, you know, that's not really for us. There's too many things that are liabilities as far as finances. That's one of the things that I want to try to do today is, you know, just kind of update a little bit. So one of the things that, you know, I would say, if you're going to start looking at alternative access options to get access to articles after losing a subscription, one of the things that you should start doing right now is discussing and figuring out how you're going to divide your user base. Because unless you're prepared to take all of the money from that big deal, or a big deal or a subscription and move it into article purchasing, it's going to be essential that you divide your user base. So I put a link to Curtis Kendrick's recent Scholarly Kitchen guest post. He was talking more about thinking differently about subscriptions and cost per use or use per cost. And I put that there as a link to this post as a really good primer on how to walk through thinking of your user base and try to break down scenarios and users and contexts, because I think he does a fantastic job of really condensing everything in an easy to understand message. I've read other articles, et cetera, which go through the same content, but I think Curtis did just a phenomenal job of putting it together in a way that that is easy to understand and consume. So I'd recommend taking a look at that post. But in general, what you want to be thinking about is the user base and how you're going to identify high value uses. So usages that you as a library and perhaps even as an institution find as high value. So those are things that you would want to remove barriers and spend more money on potentially. And then you would want to think of things that it, you know, maybe initially or maybe long-term that you would say it's a low value use. So, you know, you might say that this is an undergraduate who is just looking at articles, doing a paper where there is probably other content in an aggregator. That might be something that you would indicate as a low value use. And typically in the literature, a low value use, libraries look at an undergraduate and especially a lower division undergraduate as being a lower value use where they wouldn't trigger automatic purchasing or spend a lot of money on a usage like that. Any questions about that? I think that's something to think about, talk about, because you know there is likely to be some level of disagreement within your library unless you're all lockstep in this, that you at least want to get the opinions out and talk through you know all the different options that you have for breaking down high value and low value usage and kind of breaking up your user base based on that. Any questions? Or any questions in general yet? All right. Don't see anything or hear anything. So as we go through this, one of the questions that probably is in the back of your mind, and this price is different than when I talked at the SLC meeting. So you might be asking yourself, how much does it cost to buy any or you know an Elsevier article from, say, Science Direct? Right now, with the new contract that we have for document delivery, it would be $23. And I put an asterisk because it's actually $22.95, or if you're a library that would like to have a custom account and get a lower fee, it would be $22.45. So if you just say $23, that's how much it costs to buy from a third-party provider an Elsevier article. So another thing to think about too is that we have a pretty good idea, and this isn't just based on us guessing, it's based on other consortia's reports, many, many case studies in the literature that that breaking a big deal doesn't lead to a huge increase in interlibrary loan or interlibrary loan costs. Some case studies have indicated that there is some increase, and most find that there is very little or no increase. So that barrier of going to interlibrary loan typically leads most usages to or most users to go find something on the web potentially, or find that article on the web maybe from ResearchGate or another another quasi open access source, or to find something different. So as you're looking at your usage data, so your JR1 or whatever report you're looking at, I would highly recommend that you don't even that you don't say that this is a cost per use that you have to move into purchasing or even interlibrary loan volume, because the usage from journals or journal packages, there's a lot that if there is any barrier that people are just not going to take that extra click. And that's pretty well established. If you wanted to further reduce the impact, you can work to approach the discovery of the indexing that would lead to this higher cost content. So there, I've seen some recent posts in Scholarly Kitchen over the last year in some articles which talk about discovery strategies and mitigating high cost content and not pushing everyone towards the highest cost content, because it's just the costs are becoming unmanageable. So there's a lot of things that you can do to reduce the usage after after the big deal or after the journal subscription is canceled. But you know, whatever you do, it is not going to be a one-to-one, or it's not even going to be close to a one-to-one of what your current usage is from those subscriptions. So now that we've talked about some of the, you know, the backgrounds, it's time to start thinking about developing a strategy. So, you know, let's say January 2020, you find yourself without thousands of journals that you had in December. The first thing you want to do is to look at what it is you want as your strategy. So you know, potentially would have already broken up your user base, define some high value, low value usage, you know, scenarios, and look at where you want to apply strategies that would have the lowest barriers, but knowing that those would be more costly. And then you want to say, these are the use cases, these are scenarios that will accept higher barriers, and, you know, potentially have some slower access, and then also very likely involve some mediation and some additional staff time. So there's all these trade-offs, and, you know, just like a bridge from one place to another, there's lots of, you know, costs that you have to think about, and, you know, how you move from one place to another is definitely something that you should be thinking about right now. So what I'm going to do today is provide you with three main options for alternative access. There's lots of different configuration tweaks, configuration customizations that you can use for these three main options, but just breaking it down to three main ways that you can get to that that article or those articles in an alternative way. And one option, using one option doesn't mean that you couldn't use all other options for different titles within a package. It's really not, it's not one canceling the other out. I would expect that most would use two or three options, or you might just decide everything goes into ILL. It's really up to you, but there's a lot of different iterations. And the one thing I would say, as you look at the different options for alternative access, you know, the money portion of it is extremely important, but the communication part of it is also important. And the more complex, varied, and, you know, just exception-based you get with your alternative access options, the harder that is going to be to explain to stakeholders. So you might take some exceptions and maybe do link resolver-based purchasing for a couple of titles, but even if you do that, you would want to think closely or think carefully about how you're communicating, what options you're employing, because there's only so much attention span you can get from faculty and administrators for them to understand how you're getting this alternative access. So communicating and framing your strategies is also very important for these, you know, these different options. So the first option is link resolver based purchasing. So what this means is that you would put a purchasing link within your link resolver so that if someone got to an article in a journal that you wanted to provide alternative access to, that they would be shown a link to a service where they could trigger a purchase of an article. That article or that document delivery provider through that link would send the user directly a PDF that would be the original from the publisher. So it's going to be, you know, just a couple more steps, but it will be almost immediate. And they don't have to go into really any other service. There's a form that they fill out, or they don't have to fill out the form. They just put in a little bit of information. And then they have that article that they can download. They have the PDF. There's no DRM on it. And it's theirs to have. And in this scenario, the library pays for the article or articles, and typically on a monthly basis, you could set up a deposit on account, but most would probably want to do a monthly invoice of articles, of paying for article purchasing. So this is something that academic libraries are just getting into, so it's not widespread. I know there are some who are doing it. I think the Cal State system, some of their libraries were doing this, but it's not a widespread practice. But if you look into medical libraries, special libraries, corporate libraries, where the costs for subscriptions are much higher, and they've been using this for years, so several years, this has been a pretty common practice, using CCC's Get It Now and then also Reprints Desk. So it's something that definitely does work. It's a pretty good way to guarantee fast access to articles without a subscription. So the nice thing about us moving to Primo and Alma, that Primo and Alma are the only link resolver that this is possible with, is that you can show different services or options to different user groups. So, you couldn't have done this with Serial Solutions or Full Text Finder. It would have been all or nothing. You just put it in and it's open to everybody because you're not asking your user to log in. And, that's a positive and a negative that this is how Alma and Primo work. But, if they're going to be signed in, you might as well use this to your advantage. So, using different, different services and applying parameters to those services, you can show purchasing to only graduate students or faculty and not show it to undergraduates or to, a visiting faculty or whoever you might want to do. So since all but, I believe, two libraries are actively updating their users via some sort of an SIS load, the 58 libraries should have pretty good user data to do some sort of user group based purchasing. So some of the questions or just, the things to think about with link resolver based purchasing is that the service, so in almost terms, general electronic service, that you can also configure this to show for individual titles and specific years within titles. So, if you want that special embargo buster, you can configure it. So you could say only show it for Nature or, Nature whatever. Only show it for the last 18 months, and then an aggregator will pick up after that 18-month embargo. So there's a lot of things that you could use a link resolver based purchasing scheme for. The bad thing about this is that currently you have to set it up title by title. There's a couple of ways that we can do maybe publisher by publisher. But that level of specificity, I think, typically is a positive because you want to control costs in that scenario. So you can, also show this to any user group that you have in Alma. If you don't have a specific user group in Alma, you can't say only show it to subgroup of faculty, which are super faculty or faculty in, with grants or whoever that might be. Not suggesting any library would do that, but, you can at least look by user group. So another thing that you could think of too is, and I know that some of the Cal State libraries were doing this, is that you can show this option in addition to another lower cost option. So you could show a link resolver based purchasing option in addition to interlibrary loan, and then just put in that link resolver based purchasing option that this costs the library money. And what Cal State found was that that often led faculty or graduate students to say, oh, it's okay, I can use interlibrary loan, knowing that it's going to potentially save you money long term. And we have an FAQ on how to set this up. Pretty much you go into the general electronic services, and then you would need to put in the different parameters and configuration. Michelle did a fantastic FAQ on, I believe it's December 18th. We will get into the nuts and bolts of how to set up this link resolver based article purchasing. But just wanted to kind of put there that it's not extremely difficult setup unless you want to do it for many, many journals. And in that case, it would just be repetitive. So let's do a test to see how well a video in a PowerPoint shared in Zoom will work. So Michelle did a really great video, which showed exactly how the article delivery from a link resolver worked, because, you know, conceptually I can talk through it, but I think it will help to show exactly how this works. So we're starting from Primo. I know that's not exactly how most would come in, but once you hit the services page, it's the same from any inbound source such as Google Scholar, etc. All right. So Michelle did a search for this journal that we did, found an article that we want. And then you click on the article, and this is where the link resolver would be. So if you're not signed in, you have to sign in. She's going to sign in. And then you would have request a copy. You could say that purchase from the, purchase from a vendor. Put in your name and email address and hit place order. And then within a minute or two, you'll get a confirmation of the order. And then within a few more minutes, so, you know, usually within 20 minutes, you get a link, you get an email with a link, or the user gets an email with a link to download the document, and they're done. So that's a PDF directly from the publisher that they can use. So, it is a pretty seamless process. I understand that, no, it's not, that this isn't as easy as a subscription, but it's not a ton of barriers. Any questions on that? All right. So I'll do some pros and cons for each of these. So the link resolver based purchasing, that this is really the way that it is most reliable for you to say, for whatever journals you're doing this article, you're doing the link resolver based purchasing, that you'll get fast access within usually minutes, almost never more than an hour. You'll get the best high quality PDF. It's going to be in color. If the publisher's copy was in color, it'll be OCR'd. If the publisher OCR'd it, which, you know, most do. If there's supplemental material, you'll get the supplemental material. And, the real bad thing about it is that it could be potentially more expensive than other alternative access. And you'd want to think carefully about that and who you show it to. And, you really have to put this into your budget forecasting and, you have to think about it. So Holly asked, and I have a question in about, this. So are these PDFs accessible for ADA? So these are directly from the publisher. So it would be whatever the publisher is doing for ADA compliance. So that really is based on which publisher you're getting it from, how compliant it is. So it will be as compliant as a subscription. I think I can safely say that. And Jin asked, is there a price when requesting the article? The user is not provided a price. You can put a max cost on this if you wanted to. And Rebecca's saying the con of this is that the cost can be unpredictable. Yes. And that's where I would say most libraries would want to be careful how they approach this. And not remove a lot of barriers for a lot of user groups for a lot of titles. Jin asked, how do we know the price? You will know the price when you get the invoice, and you know, you can set it up where you get a copy of the communication, so you would know who's getting those purchases. So I don't know this name, so I'll just say Fergan. If we get rid of a conglomerate service like Elsevier, where's the indexing for some of these sources coming from? So let's use ScienceDirect as an example. You can okay, thanks, Carrie. The ScienceDirect package in Primo Central Index, soon to be Central Discovery Index, that is free to search. So you can turn on that article level indexing for, you know, without a subscription. So you wouldn't lose any indexing that you had with a subscription. So understanding that a lot of use is coming outside of the discovery service where, you know, Google Scholar is indexing ScienceDirect, et cetera. So you know, I can't speak to how common the practice of other big deals are for allowing indexing via the Primo Central Index, but just looking at a lot of big collections like that, I'd say that it's pretty common that those publishers don't shut down the article level indexing, because for them, you know, the more their content gets used in any way means income for them. So they really aren't shutting down indexing, at least what I've seen. I've not you know, I've not done a thorough quantitative analysis on it, though. But for ScienceDirect, we did check. It is open to be searched through the article level indexing in Primo. I think I'm caught up on questions. Any other questions before I go on? All right. So your other option is traditional ILL. So this means that you're probably all familiar with this. So a request goes in directly through ILL, and then, you know, either takes some staff intervention, if it's within copyright, or if it's missing data. The request goes out to other libraries, and those libraries either send you an electronic copy or they send you a PDF, which might or might not be OCR'd. And, you know, I don't want to neglect to say that, you know, having worked with a lot of libraries in resource sharing in a variety of ways, there is this also additional practice of delivering articles that may or may not be legitimately posted on the web as part of you know, the document delivery portion of interlibrary loan. So that's also a component of what you would get through a traditional ILL. And the nice thing about it is, if you really want to have predictable and controlled costs, that you can just cancel for user groups, scenarios, situations, costs that you don't want to pay for. So some of the pros and cons of traditional ILL, it's really the least expensive. I know that there are staff costs, et cetera, but for the most part, the majority of SUNY libraries already have ILL staffing, ILL departments, and I know this isn't universal and everybody has, you know, different resource constraints, but for the most part, no library is going to have to say, I need an ILL department. They have someone, or they have people. And because even a major big deal isn't going to spike your traditional ILL by huge volumes, that you could probably just absorb this with your existing infrastructure. And, you know, one, I guess you could call it a pro or a con, that ILL barrier will usually make students and potentially graduate students and sometimes faculty just go find an alternative article or find alternative access to the article, such as going on the web and finding it from ResearchGate or, you know, wherever they might find it. And this really doesn't require a whole lot of change management within your library, because the reference librarians, the subject liaisons, the faculty, everybody knows this service if you're providing it. There's really not much more communication that needs to go out about traditional ILL. The negatives are that you might get a pretty terrible PDF delivered to you, and that library on the other end might help you out and rescan it, but you know it's going to take some time. There still are delays, even though ILL continues to get faster and faster through a variety of methods of enhancing services, but it still takes time. And mostly because the vast majority of libraries are using Iliad in SUNY, the initial account creation still is cumbersome, and there's not a fantastic way to seed an Iliad database with new users. It's just not one of the strong points of that system. And the more you mediate, the more staff time you're dedicating to it. So the more traditional you are in your ILL strategy, the more staff time it's going to take. Any questions about that? So, you know, I'm going to be like NPR and admit my biases or bias here, and that, you know, I was part of a, you know, very small group of people that developed this option, I think it was 5 or 6 years ago, and you know, have worked a lot to promote, help with implementation of this option for an ILL automation system and an ILL purchase hybrid as well. So the positive of this option, or you know, one of the features, is that the user experience remains through ILL, and you don't have to necessarily talk about a new service. And then the delivery of it is enhanced via automation and article purchasing. So you really have to embrace using your ILL system fully to automate as many requests as you possibly can. This was our biggest pain point as we were rolling the system out to, you know, I think now there's, 90 libraries on Article Gateway, is that just a hesitance to let requests go out and to not touch requests. And the other thing to think about with this is that you can take a very sophisticated back-end approach to ILL delivery and purchasing, and you don't necessarily need to communicate all of that sophistication to your users, but you can do cost control and, you know, data-driven decision-making on when you're going to trigger those higher value purchases based on the scenarios. So the project and the tool is Article Gateway. So you have to be an IDS project member to use this. I know that excludes a few Iliad libraries in SUNY who aren't Article Gateway. And if you wanted to, I could, you know, give you some information on how you could do portions of Article Gateway, not using, you know, if you're using Article Gateway using other tools built into Iliad, but you know, I suspect that most will just use Article Gateway, and if you're not using Article Gateway, that you'll continue with traditional ILL. So the main thing that we've seen with Article Gateway as kind of this third option is that to create an ecosystem that moves from about 45% of ILL requests being automated, not requiring any staff mediation, and through that process being much faster, moving that from less than half to almost 95% typically. So we've seen some that are more like 98%. We've seen a few that are more towards like 91, but you know, it's typically over 90% are automatically sent out based on all of the different things that we're doing in the background. And Article Gateway can also trigger automatic purchasing, just like the link resolver, where within 1 to 2 minutes, the faculty or the user gets delivery of that PDF. That happens via API versus using the vendor system and the and the form. And then you can also set up business logic to trigger that purchasing based on a variety of scenarios. And then we do some screening of legitimate open access content. And if you're a higher volume library, the the custom account option with Reprints Desk has an open access filter that also is included, so that they would refund you if you purchase something that was in a hybrid journal that the publisher did a very poor job of making it clear whether it was open access. They have people who go back and check that and then refund your money. So that is one concern with Article Gateway, is that sometimes finding open access content in hybrid journals is challenging. So we screen using PubMed Central, which is at least for health sciences is a pretty expansive open access data source. So the basic process here is that an ILO request comes in. So any of you who've worked in resource sharing knows that ILO requests are, you know, often created differently, and you know, open URL is kind of messy. So there's a standardization of citations to make sure that there can be automation done on this, because the journal title, year, ISSN, all of that is standardized and all of the data is complete. And then checking whether you own it in any of your subscriptions, and then doing copyright checking. And then if you have reached the rule of five, or if you decide that you want to do the rule of 10, you could do the rule of 10. And then if that, you know, if you need to consider copyright, you can determine what your best option is, either to purchase it, borrow it, or whatever those options would be. So in most cases, if you're going to go from an interlibrary loan triggered into a purchase and you have that configured, that all happens in, you know, 10, 15 minutes. So there's not a whole lot of delay. So typically in this third option, it's taking the very efficient ILO process and enhancing it through automation, usage of outside data to supplement the data in the request, and then unmediating as much as possible. I'm sorry, there is no rule of 10, Elena. The rule of five, the Kantu rule of five. So if you request the rule, if you request five articles from the last 5 years of a publication, the guidelines are that you should start paying royalties or purchasing articles. So I know that some think differently about the rule of five, and that the rule of five is a guideline, and some go all the way up to the rule of 10. So I'm just saying that that's a configuration that you as an institution could choose something else. I was making a bad kind of quip, but so this is, you know, improving the staff experience and improving the user experience. That's the that's really the overarching goals. So Jennifer asked, yeah, if you have legacy access, that 2 to 5 isn't going to count, because you would have back files. So you wouldn't be incurring copyright necessarily on that, because you would be delivering that from your own collection. And Holly asked, any update on the SUNY-wide institution? Can you rephrase that? All right, I'll wait for you to type that in and just keep going. So pretty much what we try to do, so Holly, we are continuing to work on a review of Kantu across SUNY, but since I intend to post this, I'm not going to get into that, because we definitely wouldn't want that sort of information out broadly, but we are still working on it. We still have the attention of the attorney. We're just going through the process to make the attorney understand all of the different variables, and we'll definitely have some updates on that very, very soon. All right, so mostly it's just looking for obstacles and how to remove them, because every sort of obstacle in mediation adds time to the delivery of the article. And if you want true alternative access, it has to be as close to immediate as possible. And then auto purchasing is the part of the hybrid. So you can, through Reprints Desk, you can purchase and deliver articles through an API with Article Gateway that would involve no mediation on your part. So it does not have to be all or nothing. You can get very granular on auto purchasing. And then if you're cost conscious, but in some scenarios you want to provide almost immediate access, you can do that by building business logic. And then you can also define overarching max cost, maximum cost that you'll allow, and other general parameters. So to do that, article purchasing and then provide limitations, you can set up purchasing profiles that would be based on a specific journal title, years within the specific publication. So you could say only the last year, only the last 2 years. You could look at the user, so specific user data, so a piece of, you know, one database field that you could put in custom information for a user. A user group, a department could have this purchase profile set up. And then what I call the contextual purchase profile pieces, where you can set up Article Gateway to trigger a purchase of an article on Friday night at only after 10 o'clock. So that would be probably the slowest time for any ILL request, because, you know, the majority of libraries still don't process all weekend. So a Friday night at 10 article request is most likely going to be delivered on Monday. You could say purchase only those times. So from, you know, Friday at 10 to Sunday at 1 p.m., whatever that might be. And then you could say, how much is this going to cost me to borrow, either via royalties, etc., and say, I'd just prefer to purchase this if it's only $2 to $3 over what it would cost to borrow, because why not spend an extra $2 to get something to someone a lot faster? And then just general what your max cost is, and you can make all different sorts of iterations of max cost. It doesn't have to be global. So you could set one up for faculty Friday at 10 p.m., only up to $30 if you wanted it to be. So lots of different ways that you can have purchase profiles. You can have as many purchase profiles that Article Gateway will iterate through. So it doesn't have to be just one purchase profile. Pros and cons with this. You know, I would say that this is, you know, kind of a good blend of speed and close to immediate access, while also being able to limit costs and to control it, to you know, have some sort of reliable expectation, you know, here as well. And then you can you can choose to communicate about this as enhanced ILL and not an entirely new service, so that you don't have to make your communication even more complex. Some of the negatives are that, you know, although it's fast, it's not always going to be immediate. So that may lead to some disparities in timing, so that if you set up a purchase profile and a graduate student gets something in 2 minutes and then they submit another ILL request, and that one takes 2 days, that are more likely to be critical of overall ILL requesting. So, you know, there are some negatives there. And you know, I think in generally what we've seen is that, you know, traditional ILL using Article Gateway and its automation usually goes down by, you know, half. So it would go from typically 24 to like 12 hours as an average. So I'll quickly go through reviewing these options from a user perspective, because, you know, there's definitely the management piece of it and the, you know, the access piece of it from the library's perspective, but you want to think about it from the user as well, from the user's perspective as well. So, you know, and if you think of it from a user perspective, in my experience in you know, rolling out new services to faculty and graduate students, they all care about, is this going to be harder? Am I going to have to log into more things? They're very worried about, you know, their workflows. So the more you can talk about the user perspective and the experience to the faculty, to the graduate students, I think the smoother any sort of alternative access would go. So pretty much, and I'm I'm taking out the logging in, so I realize that there may be some logins that I'm taking out. So I think those are persistent and costs all different types of access. So I just left them out to make it a little bit simpler. So subscription, it's pretty easy from a user perspective. No matter where you're coming from, you hit a link resolver or a service page, and you're taken to the PDF within usually a couple of clicks, right? So I know that doesn't always happen, but more often than not, it does. So three steps, and if you look at it as far as link resolver based purchasing, it's adding one more step, and it's involving email, which might not be perfect, but I think most people are used to checking email. So you're hitting the link resolver page from wherever you're coming from, and then you're filling in a couple pieces of information, and then the PDF is delivered to you via email. And we are going to be working with the vendor on some things where they could pop up PDFs in the browser, but we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves here. And then really you're looking at four steps, 1 to 30 minutes as far as the time that elapses. And then if you look at interlibrary loan, either traditional or ILL, you have a broader variation of 2 minutes to 24 hours with typically only four steps. So if you're looking at it from a user perspective, you're thinking about time, you're thinking about the amount of complexity, forms, those things you have to fill in. Make sure that you're doing an analysis of that as well. And the better your linking and other pointers into your link resolver are, the better your alternative access will go. All right, I left, I think, enough time for some questions or discussion. Feel free to unmute yourself or type into chat. I'll stop sharing here. All right. Yeah, this is a question that I thought a lot of people would have, Brenda. For Hudson Valley and other SUNYs, the Elsevier subscription is not paid from the library budget, from the recharge budget. So that is not necessarily going to come back into your budget if you don't have Science Direct. There are no current plans to add an optional SUNY Reprints subscription that could come through a recharge to campuses. But I know that that is of interest. So, it's something that we're trying to figure out the best way to do that if we need to do this on a larger scale. So, I know that the CPC had, as part of its communication, that the funds dedicated to Elsevier should go to the library budget, but I think we all know that that's all based on the campus's willingness to do that. So that's a great point. I can't say that there are any immediate plans to do that, but I do know that many would like something like that. I'll bring that back to the sysadmin people that we're communicating with on that. So Alfred State asked, where will the money go? That depends on the campus. So whatever you do with recharges, and I think that's so the process is that the Science Direct payments or charges were coming through recharge. So different campuses handle the recharge in different ways. Some campuses, take the recharge from SUNY and then say this department is responsible for that part of the recharge, and then that comes out of that budget. Others just take that right off of the top of their overall campus budget and don't push it down to departmental campuses or departmental budgets. So where that money would go or the lack of that charge would be really dependent upon your campus. I hope that made sense. I know it's confusing. And it's even more confusing from a system administration perspective because the practices are different from campus to campus. Other questions? So there is support for setting up any of these three options. You know, I don't think there's really any need for us to help you on traditional ILL. But if you need help with link resolver based configuration or article gateway, the SUNY Library Shared Services staff will help you. That is, you don't need an extended services contract for us to help you with this. You know, the thinking on this from a system perspective is that this is an important enough and time sensitive issue that we will help campuses to get through this alternative access configuration as much as we possibly can.
This is Jane at Alfred State. I do have one quick question.
Sure.
I actually have two.
Okay.
Is the I'm a bit fuzzy on the third option. Is Reprints Desk somehow also a function of the article gateway process, or is it totally different?
It can be. So article gateway enhances traditional ILL, makes it faster, automates it more. You could choose to then also trigger article purchases through that process. And to do that in an unmediated fashion, you would have to use Reprints Desk. Copyright Clearance Center does not allow you to auto trigger purchases via API. So Reprints does. So we had to only use Reprints Desk, but you don't have to use Reprints Desk to use Article Gateway. You just have to be an IDS project member.
And forgive me, I think this may have been addressed, but I had a small interruption. I'm also wondering, based upon the current climate of my purchasing department, if Reprints Desk is not on state contract, this will be a nightmare for us to set up. And so ultimately, if we as a group go to that, is there some kind of a disclaimer or documentation from SUNY that would help campuses out?
Right. So we're working to get them on state contract, but that's a lengthy process. So we focused on getting a lower price agreement, but you know, it is in our plans to get them on state contract. But you know, it's an invoice that does not require any sort of a contract. So so we're hoping that will allow some procurement to happen in that regard. And you know, knowing how this has worked at the 15 SUNYs who currently use Reprints Desk, there hasn't yet been a problem with that. But I'm just saying we're aware of that issue. But the getting a vendor on state contract takes time, which we're working on in parallel to having the lower price agreement with Reprints Desk. Yeah, Sarah indicated that if you start article purchasing from the library's budget, then it's not going to get pushed back in with the recharge money. I'm guessing that was what you were saying. Yeah. I would say definitely a good point. I just want to say that if we could do that in a short amount of time, we would, which would be to set up the this through the recharge. But that is something that SUNY isn't quite nimble enough to do that in a quick fashion. But we do know that would benefit probably a quarter of our libraries. One of the things that I asked at the SLC meeting is at least to have an inventory of which campuses had which practices with the, you know, whether the recharge was taken off the top or pushed out to library budget, so we could at least operate knowing what we needed to work with and potentially could work specifically with those campuses. But I haven't received anything from that, so maybe that'll be a survey that we send out in the near future from SUNY rather than SLC. Holly, as so maybe no contract, but if there are terms and conditions, our purchasing office will want to review, along with an accessibility VPAT. I'd have to see what a VPAT would, you know, I'm in discussions with Reprints Desk about what they can provide for their accessibility conformance, but for them it would be, I think, very challenging to do something like a VPAT, because they might be able to provide something as far as accessibility about their forms, but then, you know, just as EBSCO would be with the main service they're providing, the PDFs in EBSCO aren't all accessible. So, you know, I think they're, it's a little bit more complicated. Yeah. So, and I guess what I would say is, you know, we tried to get the cost lower, but we're certainly aware that procurement in SUNY is challenging, especially for any vendor you don't already have established. So that might mean that at your institution you have to focus on traditional ILL as the way to go forward. So Jin asked, will the article charge be input into acquisitions per your experience? And I'm assuming you're talking about acquisitions in acquisitions in Alma. I'm not, I'm thinking, you know, just tracking them. Typically, I think that has varied depending on how closely libraries are using acquisitions to manage all of their budget. I know everyone is tracking it in some ways because, you know, if you're having this as a strategy, you have to figure out how much of your costs you've expended, but not really sure how many people are using the actual acquisitions module to do that. All right, any other questions? Thanks for everybody's time. I know we're past the hour. I can stick around for more questions. And again, you know, we'll continue to work on the longer range planning, such as state contract and recharge processes. All right, I'm going to stop the recording.